Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are here in this fallow Six Nations weekend to talk about all the stories. And there's been a fair few of them this week.
One or two.
And to obviously preview the Six Nations this coming weekend. Premiership, Top 14, Pro 14 has been going on as well. Super Rugby as well. So here we are in the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for listening. You can subscribe on the cesspit of Twitter at Rugby Podcast. We're on Acast, we're on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else, frankly. Subscribe, and then you will get every episode directly into your feed with me, Tim, with him, JB.
Hello, Tim.
And with him, Phil.
Hello, Tim.
Right, so let's waste no time whatsoever. If you were a Six Nations head coach,
okay,
and you could draft players into your squad for the coming weekend, the next couple of weekends, Who would come into your squad that's on the outside?
That's an interesting question. And it's one of those questions I wish that you told me about before we started the show. I'll let Phil answer first.
Well, there's a man who's in the squad, the Ireland squad, who I think would be fairly handy. But he's not. Well, actually, two of them who've not played a game this time. Two of my beloved Ulstermen. McCloskey, and possibly more importantly, Will Addison.
Yes.
I think I'd really like to see Will Addison in that back three.
Now, I think many neutrals would agree with you.
Or maybe...
Instead of?
Well, that is the problem.
Because you're not getting Andrew Conway and Lama aren't coming out of the back three.
No, and Stockers isn't coming out of the back three.
No. So but on the bench.
Maybe just for his versatility on the bench. I'd like to see those two involved a bit more. And if you're going to pick... So if you're going to pick two direct running centres in Aki and Henshaw. Why not pick Stockers, who's actually bigger and stronger than both of those?
Stockers.
McCloskey even.
Yeah.
But Stockers is also bigger and stronger than both of those, in fact. Is. So, yeah, and that's one change, or some game time, some squad time I'd like to see.
That's interesting. England, well, not only... Is Tamarn Harrison again an outstanding showing? He's an outstanding number eight.
That's a good one.
And Alex Donbrandt showing he is an outstanding number eight. They both had great games. But another person who had a great game on the outside of the England squad in that same position, back after 4 months, Zach Mercer.
Yeah,
it's almost like England got too many eights to pick from.
I don't suppose Eddie Jones is going to bring any of them in. Certainly
wouldn't
not for
thought,
Ireland.
Wouldn't have thought so.
So no. There was a rumor going around that Eddie was going to refresh his squad big time in the second half of the Six Nations. That's not. Doesn't seem to be happening. I know we've got one more game before the official halfway point, but
half time in the Ireland game is the halfway point.
Well, yeah,
there might be a wholesale changes then.
Let's hope so. but no sign of that. I think Harrison's a great shout. But I can't help but think that ship has just sailed, though. It's just
I agree. But Zach Mercer's the new one to add to the list of number eights that have put their hand up. I mean, and Zach Mercer did that in his first game back. After 4 months and was excellent for Bath.
Yeah. I think he probably is one of those that he might need a little bit more game time before dropping in.
Oh, absolutely.
Straight in. And if he misses next week, he's got opportunity for a couple more weeks with Bath before the next England
game. I'm not bothered about any of them not being involved in the Six Nations, and I think that's almost what the tour to Japan should be about.
Yeah. Rest a lot of the... World Cup guys.
Yeah, because you've got
who've been playing continually since September last year.
And the bulk of that squad, Eddie Jones has had very little turnover, a couple of players here and there, and they're the guys that got to a World Cup final.
Well, it's interesting when you say little turnover.
Curious.
So, very curious. Fascinating. So, his core group of players have remained a stable core group of players. He's then brought in a huge number of players into the squad to have a look at them to determine whether he deems them test match animals, and then a huge number have gone by the wayside without actually playing a game.
What do you think I'd love to know what he looks for.
So the players talk, if you've ever heard them talk about how tough the fitness sessions are with under Eddie, the fitness and skills, so it's like a game-type scenario. And when you listen to the players talk about that, they all say it's more difficult than playing test match rugby.
So that's what they say in Wales Cup too, isn't it?
So God knows what it is, but it sounds tough. And he obviously uses that both for the fitness, for the intensity side, but also as a predictor.
Do you think this is binary then? So do you think this is binary? It's like, he's just not fit enough. He's just not working hard enough.
I think it's more than just he's not fit enough. He's not working hard enough might be a better descriptor, because there's an element when it comes to fitness like that, certainly from when I've been doing it, of a mental side as well.
Exactly.
The mental
exactly.
toughness.
So it almost doesn't matter. It's not about what levels you reach on the bleep test. It's do you go until you pass out with exhaustion
and have
to be put on a drip?
Yeah, it's that kind of thing. Going beyond.
I'm sure I'm making this up now. But I seem to recall, maybe it's the Sevens team, but they train with heart rate monitors on, don't they? And when your heart rate gets to a certain height, I'm sure with the Sevens team, they were pulling them out of training because that's when injuries occur, when they're incredibly fatigued.
Yes.
I wonder if they're looking at that saying, okay, he's not completed, say, the bleep test, but he was running at 6,000 beats a minute for 5 minutes, which is pretty good, and therefore we'll let him off. Even though his overall fitness it isn't great, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but then there'll be a bit where, so even though his heart rate has not reached what we believe the maximum is, his performance has started dipping, so that's a mental thing that he's not pushing himself through the pain barrier.
Interesting.
Do you see what I mean?
God.
So also, I know certainly a while ago, the RFU were looking at probably heart rate monitors, but also the GPS data, because they track both total distance run, but also max speed and maintaining max speed over a period of time. They were looking at that to try and correlate it, if I can say that, with injuries. So using the two of them to potentially predict injuries. But I think the nature of rugby union is so unpredictable. David Epstein would call it a wicked game, where there are just so many moving parts and so many unpredictable parts that I think it would be very difficult to track that compared to, say, doing a bleep test or doing a 5K.
Well, I guess compared to football, because football is basically running and then more running. It's just running. I mean, there's obviously a tremendous amount of skill involved, but the physical aspect of it is only running.
Unless you get a freak contact type injury. Because most of the contact, like shoulder-to-shoulder contact in football,
you then dive.
Low.
Yeah.
There's a lot of danger in diving onto the floor then and rolling around.
Yeah, precisely. A lot of it's very low contact, whereas rugby is very high contact and normally more than two people in each contact, and it's very unpredictable for injuries.
Mm. Absolutely.
But I'd love to know what those parameters are in Jones's head. And it might be just, you might have a few that are hard and fast written down, and a few will just be a gut feel type thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the sort of question someone needs to ask him, because I've never actually heard him talk about that. And he's probably the most interviewed coach I've ever come across.
That would be really interesting.
Yeah, ask that next time. That's what you should ask.
For Wales, there's a lot of talk about the fly half position.
Yeah, why is this?
More injuries.
Dunbeger not recovered?
Potentially not.
Owen Williams has got a hamstring strain, has he?
Looking like they might need to field another 10 against France. And there's talk that Wales will instantly relax their 60 cap outside of Wales rule to allow Rhys Priestland to take the reins for Wales.
Strike me as the way forward, that.
But Callum Sheedy is putting his hand up with his performances for Bristol as well.
I think I would go that direction.
It's not a bad option. Get him some game time. Mm. See if he's a test match animal.
Yeah, well, the thing is, this is the difference between England and Wales. Well, it was in the Gatland. We don't know what's going to happen. But Gatland are going to make a test match animal. How many fitness camps would Thomas Francis need to show up to before... how many attempts at Eddie Jones' camp would he need before he got in the team?
Yeah. Under Eddie Jones, a lot.
Yeah.
So we'll see. He'd have one attempt and that's it.
We'll see on the Wales one, but there's clearly an issue at 10 there for them. Elsewhere, some people are sort of saying, should George North continue? I think he will continue on the wing.
I think he shouldn't. I think
I think he will, but I'm with you. I think okay. he should.
I don't know. I mean,
I'd love to see Lewis.
Do you know what?
Stomach.
Put that one on ice, and we'll come back to Six Nations at the end. And the final one is Italy. Well, they can do what they want. And France, who knows?
France
don't really need to do anything. Really. Scotland, though, there's one player they need that we heard more of, well, from his coach, that there was an update since our last podcast on the situation with Finn Russell. Will he be in the Scotland squad to line up in this next game against Italy? He played for Racing 92 today. Who knows?
Did they win?
They did, just 30 points to 27. Cheslin Colby, by the way, fly half, nailing touchline conversions all over the show.
Cheslin Colby's fly half?
Yeah.
He started at 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
He did nail a touchline conversion. He missed one from just in front as well.
That's ambitious, a bit erratic. Isn't it?
I mean, it's a bold move.
It's very bold.
Do you remember speaking to a relatively young South African chap in Osaka?
A relatively young South African in Osaka?
Yeah. Who was there with his family.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Was it Stu?
Stuart.
Yeah. He was saying his school played against Cheslin Colby's school, and Colby's school put Colby at fly half just because, like, just get the ball in his hands. He never needed to pass it or kick it, because you just give it to Cheslin Colby and he'll do the rest.
That?
Well, we'd have a few strong zeros.
You clearly hadn't had enough strong zeros.
I played up from the fifth form. I played in the first team, or year 10, as they call it now, or year 11. What's GCSEs? Whatever it is.
GCSE.
Whatever.
Fifth form.
Year 11, let's say. I played 2 years up into the first team.
No, that's not.
Anyway.
Okay, so...
Played against Lord Wandsworth School, which is quite a good school. And Johnny Wilkinson was there.
Yeah.
And he was 12. He wasn't even the 10.
Was he any good?
He was all right, yeah.
He was 12 years old playing fifth.
Yeah. He was the 12.
Noticeably better than everyone else?
You could tell he was good.
Didn't he play in the under 21s, I think it was at the time, or the under 19s? I'm sure he played 12 in that as well. And there was a lad, name I definitely cannot remember, who played 10 and kept Johnny Wilkinson out of the 10.
That's
shirt.
His claim to fame, isn't it? He's telling
never,
that. He's...
Never made it. Never. Yeah, like, he's a name you'll never, ever remember. Never heard of him.
Interesting. So, a story like that is Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger couldn't start for his school team because the coach's son played quarterback. I wonder what's happened to him.
Wow.
The coach's son. Career trajectory.
Phil, you saw what Gregor Townsend had to say on the Finn Russell situation. What did you take from that?
So, to a degree, this was exactly what I was expecting, which was we heard one side of the story from Finn Russell last weekend, which didn't really paint him in a particularly negative light. We've then heard another story which contradicts a lot of it from Gregor Townsend. It doesn't throw Finn Russell under a bus as much, but it does certainly disagree with some of the statements that Finn Russell said. Just around Finn Russell's attitude and willingness to engage with the process, and some of the suggestions from Finn Russell that Gregor Townsend didn't particularly like him, or he found him hard to work with. Certainly from Gregor's side, he had a lot of positive things to say about Finn Russell and how coachable he was and how he's enjoyed coaching Finn Russell for the past 7 or 8 years.
So Finn Russell's criticism of Gregor Townsend is he's not a people's person. But then if you're not a people's person, you probably wouldn't identify that you're not a people's person. You probably think you're doing it fine.
I can't believe I'm going to say this. You need to turn yourself up just a little bit, JB.
Do I?
Just a tiny bit.
There you go. How's that?
That's better. That's more like it.
Okay. Yeah, you probably wouldn't notice that you're not a people's person.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
And I suppose Greg has also got to be mindful of leaving the door well open.
Well, very, very much open.
Although he could have been, had he wanted to leave it firmly open, he could have been a lot kind of nicer and he could have disagreed
a
lot less with.
The phone couldn't even call Finn.
Well, so I think...
The irony is, Finn Russell said, this guy doesn't talk to me. So he's told the paper that he does talk to him, rather than picking up the phone and saying, Finn, let's talk about this.
But then it was Finn Russell that started the paper.
Yes, he did.
Type stuff.
With his,
it felt like Finn wanted to get
man
the story
spreading on the big sofa.
Yeah, that's incredible. That picture just reeked of contrition.
So we'll see anyway, and we'll come back to the Six Nations at the end. There's been plenty of other stuff going on. We'll get into the championship and the funding issue there, because that's quite a meaty one to get into. But Dai Young.
Yeah.
The good Dai Young.
They do.
Live oh, fast,
good,
Dai
nice.
Young.
Good Dai Young, yeah. personally, I think it should have happened a while ago. He obviously seems like a very good man. People like him. I've questioned his coaching for a fair bit of time now, and I think Wasps, on balance, I think they probably made the right decision.
So, do you think they will retain Lee Blackett and Titterall and their current coaching setup
Ian
for the
Costello, defence coach?
Yeah, for the remainder of the season.
I don't.
Do you think they'll make an appointment before the end of the season?
Oh, sorry. I don't know is the answer, but I think I would not be surprised at all if someone else comes in at the end of the season.
Let's talk about Joe Worsley being announced within the next couple of days.
That's a decent signing.
Yeah, because he's been coaching in France for a good number of years with some positive results.
Yeah, I'm going to stick up for Dai Young and say that he became coach in 2011.
Yeah,
he turned the club around.
Yep.
Took them to the brink of winning the Premiership. One stupid Nathan Hughes penalty away from winning the Premiership, potentially. Mm-hmm. And over the last couple of years, he's been operating with a backdrop of severe financial issues.
Yep.
Which have put massive constraint on his wages to the fact, I mean, I don't know this for certain, but...
I think about 2 million under, aren't they? I've made that number up.
I think they're significantly under the wage cap and possibly the lowest paying... the lowest wage bill in the Premiership.
Yeah, and on top of that, you've got the, you know, we've got the training ground issues.
The training ground issues. He has lost some absolutely amazing players.
Yeah.
Which, you take the top four or five players out of any side in the Premiership and then say, go on, off you go, go and do your job.
Saracens.
And don't replace them. So I feel very sorry for Dai Young. I think he's done a really good job, and he's been a very steady hand on the tiller. There were stories of times where he paid
on the tiller is
through
right.
through hard times, and there were stories about him. And I don't know if they're true or not, but there were certainly stories about him paying players out of his own pocket when the club couldn't pay them.
No, I think the stories were
or he paid for some things.
Yeah, I think the story was he was paying for medical supplies.
Yeah, tape
that's medical supplies. Yeah,
God.
That's what I think.
So if that gives a context as to what he's been operating within, and how destabilising that must be to anyone trying to keep a squad together when that as a backdrop.
I think there's a few things though. I think he has generally done as well as his squad lets him. So when his squad was good, he did very well. When his squad is not so good, he basically correlated with the talent available to him. Like I say, steady hand on the tiller, I get that. But after this amount of time...
That's no... Well, bearing in mind other clubs in the league that you look at and go, well, are Leicester operating to the talent that they have in their squad?
No, below it.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why they should all be fired. Right?
But Gloucester, for example, for the last few years. Yeah. Bath, apart from the one year in 2015...
But then you look at Exeter. Now, they've got Well, they've got a couple of lads in the England squad, but they tend to make everyone around them better, don't they?
Mm. Yeah.
Steve Diamond, that's a great example. You know, always operating on one of the smallest budgets traditionally and not getting relegated. You know, he was doing something else. They need a Steve Diamond type, I would say, at Wasps, because they're lucky this year there was no relegation. But if there was relegation, there'd be a real hole. And actually, it's probably one of the reasons that Dai Young's gone. Is because they don't need to worry about this. Yeah. You know, if they want to transition away from Dai Young, now is a good time to do it.
Loris Dallaglio intimated as much after the Wasps-Leicester game.
Yeah. So the statement that was made was he's stepping away from first team duties for an interim period, which is a kind of a non-conclusive way of saying he's quit or he's been fired.
I don't think Wasps want to get rid as such. I think Wasps want to have somebody else in there who has a more modern take on coaching or a different spin on coaching.
I think they do. I'm reading into it. They probably do want to get rid, but he's on a long contract.
Oh, that is absolutely true too. But I don't think they would be adverse to keeping him around but in a non-rugby, you know, like a well, they, David
they
style.
Well, they might as well, if they're going to spend the money on him, if he's not going to go and come to a compromise arrangement where he gets a percentage off, of his contract, then, well, they may as well get some value out of him.
Yeah, yeah. Mowing the pitches and cleaning down the showers and I mean, look, sweeping the changing rooms.
The money he's on a good contract.
Tight head.
Do you want to keep him around and just pay him part of his contract every month, which I think I'd probably do, until he decides to move on and get a new job, or do you want to pay him all in one go? And I know what I would choose. It's a sad way for a good man to leave a club, is what I think. But I also think Wasps will look back at the decision and go, yeah, actually, pretty good move.
I wonder if there'll be people in that squad who signed contracts because Dai Young was sticking around.
I think it might be the opposite. But, you know, it's only conjecture.
Yeah. A big story this week, championship funding slashed. This has caused... I was quite pleased and... Well, maybe not surprised, but I was quite pleased how this captured the imagination of a real broad amount of rugby fans. Fans of Premiership, fans of just Six Nations, or fans of grassroots clubs.
And players as well.
And players, yeah, at all levels.
Yeah, because there are a lot of people who have played in and around that level and gone on to do better things.
Yep.
So I'm going to attempt to summarise what's happened. So this is basically, reading between the lines, a consequence of a new boss at the RFU and Conor O'Shea coming into his post. Mm-hmm. And this is them putting their... That seems to have been what's prompted the change, right? I think that seemed
apparently,
reasonable.
Sorry, just to interrupt you, apparently Conor O'Shea drives a Lamborghini. Please continue.
There you go. It was, I'm sure it was a Maserati when he was at Quinn's.
Got to get the free parking.
The basis on which the RFU have, in February 2020, come out and said, as of next year, September 2020, we are going to cut the funding by roughly 50%, is on the basis that they've said the 14 championship clubs have not achieved the agreed goals of producing a financially viable second tier, developing and growing a second tier with the ambition to become a Premiership club, developing English qualified players for Premier clubs and ultimately England teams, develop English Premiership and national coaches, and developing a community programme associated with the clubs. I think this is what's really... I think what's really upset the championship clubs is they've gone, oh, sorry, what? Those goals were conditional. This is on basis... This is what they said they agreed in 2015. And the championship clubs have collectively said, these goals were what we were all working on together. They weren't conditional goals that meant our funding got cut.
There was no contingent.
And if it was a case that it was dependent, then in the last 4 years, you've not mentioned it once that one of them or other of them or one club or other club is underachieving it. So to come out and do it in February... Is that they shocking and outrageous? I think with the words.
My
words
biggest
used.
Issue with this by a country mile is, it was so sudden. You know, at least give them more notice. Give me, you know, you've got business models that need to change. You've got contracts that need to be paid. Staff that need further employment. You need to give these people more notice. That for me was by far the biggest takeaway. I can actually get on board with a lot of what the RFU has said there. But I can't get on board with you saying, hey, guys, next year we're going to cut your funding by half. Deal with it now.
In 6 months' time.
Yeah.
Oh, don't worry about... do worry about all those contracts you've already put in place for all your players to be playing next year, because you're going to have to be funding most of it.
Yeah.
That's... You're right. That bit... So the timing of it is, I think, dreadful. When you're trying to run business. And Tim, I think the point that you're highlighting on those RFU deliverables is a really, really key one. Because you'll often have contracts where... There are clear, explicit conditions that you need to make, and there are punitive measures if you fail to meet those conditions.
You work in construction.
With construction contracts. And you'll often have things like, you need to build this scope to this spec on this date. If you fail that, then there are punitive measures, there are delay damages, and you'll be liable for potentially tens or hundreds of thousands of pounds a day or a week. Mm. There are also, within the contracts, nice, soft, fluffy words around working collaboratively, around CSR-type stuff. Around,
CSR?
Corporate social responsibility-type stuff, like developing the community stuff, community projects, raising apprenticeships, that kind of thing, where it is all parties' ambition to do as well as you can on those objectives, but there are no teeth, there are no punitive measures against if you fail to meet those conditions. And it seems like in this, certainly the championship clubs themselves have seen these deliverables as that softer side thing. And possibly even the RFU have seen it as that softer side ambition for 4.5 years mm-hmm. until they've got themselves in a sticky situation financially, and then they've used them as a get out to avoid paying what is a couple of million pounds a year in fees to these RFU to these championship clubs.
Yeah.
And that while it's in the contract, the way I'm reading the championship club's message is that flip from it's an ambition to, oh no, this is a punitive measure. This is a demand that you had to have met these,
and
otherwise
also,
you're getting hit with a stick.
They just can't control. One of them was developing coaches. Well, has anyone given these coaches a shot? I mean, when's the last time that we heard of a coach been pulled up from the championship?
I don't agree that the championship aren't delivering on some of these, by the way.
Well, you know, they might. I mean, the problem is...
We just mentioned Lee Blackett is now acting head coach at Wasps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an example.
Yeah, Lee Blackett's been there for a long time now.
Yeah, yeah, but where did he come through?
He was Rotherham, wasn't he? He played Lee in the championship.
I'm not saying you're wrong. What I'm saying is there might be a ton of coaches in the championship who are good enough, who just need a chance. And if they're not given that chance, well, how can they possibly say?
Well, yeah. And let's just flip this, and let's just say that the RFU were suddenly saying that there was a financial situation if Premiership clubs didn't achieve a financially viable professional game. You could say how financially viable is the Premiership at this moment in time? How English qualified players was it? Which team was it? What was it? Sale. This weekend had five English qualified players in their starting 15. It was Sale or Worcester, maybe.
But,
I don't know.
Worcester, it would be.
but there are.
It's inconsistent standards.
Standards, and then English coaches and things. That again, there are.
I'm not sticking up for the Premiership RFU though, but I think understanding it probably helps you just maybe digest what's happened a little better. So when people say is an unsustainable business model, and they point to the Premiership losing, what is it, average 2.5 million a year or something ridiculous like that. That's absolutely true. But the problem is the RFU and the Premiership interact because the Premiership need the RFU, and the RFU need the Premiership's players. So those two are locked together. Now, that payment going to the Premiership clubs is not to make them financially sustainable. In fact, I would argue, as we've spoken about many a times on this pod, that Premiership rugby isn't sustainable. They're basically playthings of rich people who want to do further business off the back of owning these clubs, which is fine, and that in itself is a sort of sustainability. So it isn't the same thing. They don't need to be sustainable because someone is footing the bill. Now, the payments to the Championship club, unless they can be financially sustainable on their own two feet, they're something completely different. And also, the Championship isn't going to be putting back as much into Team England and the RFU structures as, say, the Premiership is. And actually, the Premiership isn't doing that. What the Premiership's doing is just supplying the players for the national team, which raises all the money for everything anyway.
But I say, so my view on this, just in a nutshell, is that's a very short... I agree that that's how it's being seen, and I can see the logic in what you're saying. I think that's a really short-sighted way of looking at the Championship, because actually, was it in the squad that went to Murrayfield, 13 out of the starting 15, or something like 15 out of the 23, or something like that. A big number of them spent
some time
in the Championship. And if you've ever watched A-League games, it is not a competition that prepares you for Premiership or international rugby. And you watch a Championship game, particularly if you're a forward
definitely.
You are getting... And Phil's played in the Championship, so you can... Phil can speak from experience on this one. You are getting meaningful rugby. And meaningful rugby when points are on the line, when it matters, replicating
the
situation
no
that you get in the Premiership, way more than A-League does.
There's no way. I've been to a fair few A-League games, and there's no way. It doesn't even look like Premiership. Do you know what it looks like? It looks like rubbish Super Rugby. That's what it looks like. It's just fast and loose with loads of kids.
Mitre Cup.
And actually, Premiership players don't play well in the A-League. So I went to watch a game once with a load of heavy Sale lads in their big, the guys who you'd want to grind out a win. And they just couldn't keep up with basically a young Wasps team.
Yeah, 18 to 21-year-olds who want to spin the ball.
Well, yeah.
And Premiership coaches are saying, well, God, the demands on our squad are such that it's so hard. We've always got 10, 15 guys in the physio room. We've got to put out a squad at the weekend. The number of A-League games that get dropped because they can't field squads or they're packing them full of local lads from National One.
Yeah, yeah.
And so just in my opinion, the A-League, this is where I think the RFU are going to take it, or the Premier Rugby are going to take it, where it's Premiership and A-League together, and that's an academy, Premiership, A-League, academy, and that's the pathway.
And the Premiership Rugby Cup thrown into
and Premiership
that.
Rugby Cup, and I don't think that is the right pathway, and I actually think the Championship is the right way to get rugby under your belt, meaningful rugby, and so I would ring fence the top two leagues if you were going to ring fence and try and have 24 or 26 teams. But Phil's played in the Championship, so we should defer to him on this one a little bit.
Well, the point that you make, I really only played when it was National One, because in 2009.
Oh, I played the same level as you then.
Well, 2009 was it when National One became the Championship. Oh, so there were 16 teams in it at that stage.
Well, there was Premiership A and Premiership B at one point, wasn't there?
Oh, that's before my time. So when I played from about...
Coach Leagues was this?
2006 to 2009, it was Premiership, then National One. And there were 16 teams at that stage in National One. And
16
then,
teams.
Then, yeah, playing that.
Brutal season. That.
Playing that when, especially at that stage, you had probably five London teams. You had maybe one or two in the northeast.
Down to Redruth.
Yeah. Some Cornish Pirates, Esher, Cinderford. I'm getting confused with the years. Anyway, so they changed it then from 16 down to 12. They doubled or tripled the funding at that stage for the 12 that made it, and with the ambition of everyone being full-time pro. Now, at that stage, it wasn't really viable. You had a handful of full-time pro teams like your Exeters and your Leeds, and a few others, Plymouth, Cornish, Pirates, those type organisations, and a few who were like mix and match, maybe a few pro players, a few part-timers, and then some like Sedgley Parks and your Orals and your Otleys in years before that, or Manchester's, or your Richmond's, who were just like kind of, well, very much amateur or semi-pro part-timers. In terms of the standard, there's a good number of players who've gone on to bigger, much bigger and better things. The likes of Joe Marler, Mark Atkinson.
Harry Williams Loof. Said he wouldn't be playing. He wouldn't be an England player now. Yeah. Were it not
ben
for
Mooney,
Jersey his time there.
Yeah, all of those boys. Who now? It's interesting because it's fascinating. It's curious. because a good number of those players were academy players loaned out. There were relatively few, or I think there's relatively few, who've gone the Mark Atkinson type route, the Harry Williams type
where they might have been academy
route.
Players and then got let go.
Yeah, the Billy Twelve Trees type route, played against someone who's at Bedford.
Ben Ronson?
Yes.
Ed Slater, Callum Green?
Yeah. Yeah. So I played Ben Ronson when he was at Saracens Academy when he was playing for, I'm sure it was London Welsh. Paul Doran Jones was a similar one. Although I think his route was slightly different again. But yeah, I think there's far more of the England players who were academy players.
Academy players loaned.
Who were loaned out.
For a bit of game time.
The pure ones who have either were... Like a Rory McConachy, who was...
Hartbury.
Yeah, guys like that who were either picked up by an academy and then dropped or not in an academy.
There's not many of those.
And then have come through.
Harry Williams and Rory McConachy are the only ones I can think of that have had England time. Was Mark Wilson one of those?
England time with?
Who were like either let go or never made it into an academy and then got to the top via lower league team. Roy McConachy and
Billy,
Harry Williams.
Billy Twelve Trees.
Billy Twelve Trees.
Because he was Leicester Tigers, then dropped by them, had an unbelievable season for Bedford.
Ed Slater, Callum Green, Alex Lewington. There are a lot of these guys, but in terms of the top, very, very top level England players, there's a load in the Premiership.
Yeah.
Not as many in the England team.
No. But you would sort of expect that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You would. You would. So, you'd think a lot of them. But to your point before, Tim, I think there could be an alternative. I think, JB, what you were hinting at before was the RFU are going to look at some other route of getting these players great experience. Premiership Rugby Cup, A-League, whatever it is. I think you're right, Tim. I think, based on my experience and what I know about those different competitions, I think that certainly for forwards, Championship is a brilliant, brilliant breeding ground for the attritional rugby. Now, if they can create a breeding ground, great, let's see it. And you do have then the true, the club standing on their own 2 feet without this additional funding, but I'm not sure how realistic that is in the short term.
So I okay, so just out of interest, how much were you getting paid in the Championship a game?
Not a huge amount. So when I played, I was 21, fresh out of uni. I got offered, I played a few games for the second team, scored loads
1 million
of
tries.
Scored a load of tries, and then got called up to play away at Doncaster. And it was a very relatively small amount.
I got that's a
few hundred
national one, Newbury quid. And Manchester was around about the same amount of money, and it was sort of along the line. I remember Newbury, it was 50 quid if you played.
Yeah.
100 quid if you played and you won.
Oh, nice. So the issue I have with it, right, is I was talking to a friend of mine who's a football manager, and he was saying in the conference, these lads in the, oh, was it one below the conference? You know, you can expect something like £1,000 a week. Now, with the Championship, or the level that you guys were at when it was National One, it was nothing like that, right?
No. So I used to get 25 quid, 25 quid for each training session, Tuesday, Thursday as well.
Nice,
so.
Nice.
Don't get me wrong, there were guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, and there were other guys who were on money.
Like, the rumour, so I played against Exeter when Steenson was there, Matt Jess was there, I think Ben Moon was there, Dan Toohey was there.
Yeah.
Like, they had a load of...
Call us Spencer.
Proper,
Ben Moon.
Proper
Ben
yeah,
Moon would have been there.
So all those guys were there. And there was rumours that they were paying... So this is 2009, but they were paying Premiership salaries to their entire squad. And they had, at that stage, they had almost like two full squads, because they had the squad that had got them there.
That's right.
And then they brought in an extra like 20 guys who were the highest paid players, but they were paying like 50 guys on that.
Yeah,
that kind of money.
The year they went up, they had the biggest squad in the Premiership.
It's
as Bristol,
huge,
actually.
Absolutely huge squad.
And there are guys, there are clubs in the Championship who are paying decent wedge.
Yeah,
so,
but not there are guys who are on like £3,000 a year.
So my point on this, right, is that the Championship, in some ways, is good. And if it was sustainable, everyone was a full-time professional, I'd be like, okay, I can see where the development...
That's how most clubs operate in the Championship, or at least
I
certainly
thought there was
the majority.
Only two full-time teams.
Don't... these days, genuinely, I don't know.
I mean, that's what I thought, but I could be wrong. Anyway, so my point is this. If you're only paying a certain amount of money to these players, the biggest problem with the Championship is the travel. You could not really... I mean, you're either playing because you want to go up to the Premiership, but you can't make a living there. So you've got a situation where players don't want to be there because 400 quid a weekend isn't enough to give up your Friday, your Saturday, and then recover on Sunday. My whole thing with the Championship is I actually think it should become completely amateur, and I think it should regionalise. And if they want to play long distance games, they can have a cup game.
Where does that meaningful rugby come for someone like Dan Cole, who spent a lot of time, he spent several seasons at Bedford and said it was the making of him?
Yeah, because for tight heads particularly, playing against those old boys who play in that league,
where does,
that would be brilliant.
Yes, Carl Sinclair hasn't done that. He's spent a few games on loan at Championship, and there are ways to do it, but...
My suggestion for the Championship, right, and it works...
No, I understand. Where do players get that meaningful rugby?
I think it's a mixture from going into a professional club once every couple of weeks. Sale do this a lot with a lot of players. They just bring them in, they... You know, give them some time there, and then they send them away again. And then
no,
the
no.
highest level.
Where do the young guys in a club setup get? Okay, you just send them out to a club.
Yeah, basically.
Okay,
and I think that's the way. I mean, if you look at the clubs around the northwest, right?
Which is the area that we know best.
Yeah, you will see Sale lads constantly going out, not to Championship clubs, but places like Sale FC, Macclesfield. Clubs which are on the Championship, so they can get meaningful rugby, which isn't Championship rugby, a couple of levels down. And in a way, that works better. because you can get better quality players for less or no money because, well, actually, they do have to travel. But the travel isn't as onerous as in the Championship. So I think I'd start... I mean, certainly in the North West, you could have a hell of a league. So like a really competitive league.
I could get on board with regionalising it, but you would need... You would need overarching competition, so national, like a national cup type competition.
Yes, you need a cup and you need a regional one.
I do still think that will lead to a lower standard than the Championship currently is.
I agree with that.
But there'd be a lot more players playing.
It's like South Africa have Super Rugby, Currie Cup, and the Currie Cup is awesome. The Mitre 10 in New Zealand is a really
ITM Cup or whatever it's
ITM
called.
ITM Cup, whatever it is a good. Yeah, good standard.
Bloody good standard.
I mean, and the Championship in England is a damn good standard.
It is a good standard, but I think lowering that standard a bit to have more players involved would be better. And actually, if you're not paying the players, they're more likely to stay in their clubs and form a good nucleus of local teams. And I think about Nottingham, right? Do Nottingham fans or the people of Nottingham really care if Nottingham beat Doncaster, for instance?
There's a couple of thousand who do.
That's a particular rivalry. And yeah, there's a couple of thousand that do, that would turn out and watch that one and that do, which is only, you know, proportionally, that's not that far off some of the attendances at Premiership clubs.
Well, sorry, maybe that's about bad example. What the point I'm trying to make is if you had a local rivalry, so actually those two could actually end up in the same regional competition anyway.
Yeah.
But if you had...
if you had four regions, they probably would
do. When Sedgley Park were up there, was it exciting for Redruth? I don't think either team really knew anything about each other. Right? Whereas Macclesfield, Sedgley Park, that's a tasty game.
I understand what you're saying. But
people care.
I understand what you're saying. So the one other thing I would add into the mix, and this is just from very personal experience, is that the route my brother took to being a Premiership player... was we went to a comprehensive school that played rugby just between September and December, just one term of it at school.
Yeah.
And we would play against the odd private school who clearly, you know, their guys are training every day after school in the gym. And I went through the county representative thing and you're playing against all these private school kids. And you just, the coaching that they get, the...
Different level, isn't it?
The conditioning that they get is a different level. So that by the time they're 18, 19, they're getting into an academy... They are ready. My brother was someone who got to the Premiership and was a damn good player, but he wasn't ready aged 18, 19 because he hadn't had that. So he went to the Bath Academy, did quite well, but came out of the system and went to Plymouth, went to Nottingham and ended up back in the Premiership at Sale and London Irish. And there's a lot of guys. And I just, that's one issue I have is, these kids that aren't ready aged 18, 19 because of the school they went to isn't a private school.
But I think that's going to be the case. Anyway.
Are you going to open up the gap?
Well, I'll tell you what Sale do, right? And I'm only talking about Sale because I know about them. I'm sure other clubs are doing the same thing. But I think this is probably the best way because you're never going to compete with the private schools. They've got all the... I mean, not only the fact that they've got awesome coaching and they probably get ex-internationals into it and then they've got all their pals in the RFU that pick the kids for, you know, the higher level stuff again and the representative stuff. You're not necessarily going to compete with that. But the standard of coaching overall, I think, in England has risen dramatically. And what Sale do is they've got a programme where they bring in a load of coaches. It's like a development path for coaches. So they can replicate what Sale are doing. And that filters down from Sale all the way through all the local clubs, right the way down to the junior clubs.
I understand.
If you produce a player that goes to play for Sale, they will then... pay you. I think it's £10,000. So there's like a really good financial incentive for clubs to push.
That is a good initiative.
That's good.
The point I'm making is that not all kids aged 18 are equal through no fault of their own. But kids aged 25 could have equal opportunity to be Premiership or international players. But just the different pathway exists to get there. And Ed Slater is a guy that we could, you know, friend of the pod, we could get him on. He went the same route. He was second row at Nottingham with my brother. So was Callum Green, second row at Nottingham.
It's a tasty second row, that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, have Ali Williams at the same time?
Yeah, they did.
They did have bloody hell.
So on that point
as well, the bit that does worry me long term is the reduction in money as a way of attracting and retaining talent within the overall game and retaining guys like your brother who at 18 weren't quite ready, by the time they're 25, 28, already.
But yeah, only because he could be paid to play rugby and precisely, get that conditioning.
And if there wasn't that money...
Not big money either.
Here's a really important point on that. So people who are talented athletes are normally not just talented at one thing. They're normally got skills in multiple different areas.
That's a great shout.
Including a lot of the rugby players are bloody bright blokes.
Yeah.
So you're not just saying, oh, they'll just go and drop down and play Sedgley Park or Fylde or Caldy or whatever it is. They'll go into either a totally different sport or go and do full-time banking or law or what, and not be involved in the rugby
or JB, you know, if they go amateur, like it's completely amateur outside the Premiership, as you're saying, they will never be conditioned as an elite athlete. Yeah. So you will never, if my brother dropped out of the Bath Academy and went and played amateur rugby and got a job in the week, he would not have been a Premiership player. Just a fact.
I kind of think of it like this. So I think one of the highest level sports, as in, the professionalism and whatnot is probably the NFL. And there is no professional American... Well, there is a small amount now, so the XFL, Canadian Leagues, whatever, but that's not where the talent is developed. All the talent is developed from basically schools and then amateur college things. And the colleges do train like pros, but when you're a young man, you don't need to go to work to, you know, pay for your mortgage. You've got till 21 to get into some decent shape. And if you're part of a club
slightly
and whatnot...
slightly disingenuous.
That is a totally different system, though.
It's a totally different system, and it's not fair to say they don't earn money. Yes, they don't earn money, but they get everything. They get free education
in
America.
And they're playing in front of 100,000 people. As an 18, what incentive do you need?
They get university for free, all their accommodation, all their food, all everything paid for... And they get to play in front of 100,000 people and go and slay it as a student. Yeah.
Bad example. Right? They've got a lottery ticket as well. They've got a good chance.
I would also put this, right? If you're a bright bloke and you think your career is in banking, I don't think you're in the Championship anyway. You're in the Championship because you really, really want to be a professional rugby player.
Currently.
And actually...
Yes, currently.
I know lads who've been offered contracts at Doncaster and they are... I mean, let's just say... You could live on it, but not very comfortable.
Well, there are other clubs. So London Scottish, for example, I know that, because Nick was head coach there last year, I know that they actually were recruiting people on the basis of, listen, we're going to do our sessions in the evenings, early in the morning, so you can go and do a job. And if you need, by the way, if you need some contacts and some help to try and get a contact
in the city.
We know a load of guys.
In a lot of ways, I actually think it's more healthy for these lads to be told you are semi-pro. This means go out and make sure you've got a backup plan, because the 25 grand a year that we're going to pay you isn't enough. So to say you're going to be a full-time pro on 25 grand, give up your life for travelling and whatnot just to get into a bit better shape. I don't actually think that's a good career or life choice unless you're super confident that you're going to get signed up by Gloucester.
But the point, by the reduced funding, it's not going to be. So right now a lot of the contracts are somewhere between 10 and 25k.
Yeah, it's nothing.
It's not going to be that. It's going to be between 5 and 15k. And a lot of people say, well, where I could live on 25k, I can't live on 12k, so I'm not going to do it at all.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, I'm sure some people will do that. I would just counter by saying, if they didn't have the travel, and they didn't have to give up a whole week, there'd be a lot more people who do not play at a high level. Mike, back, I mean, you gave up for work, right? Effectively, an injury.
Because I went down to London working.
But if Sedgley Park had a high level competition regionally, you might even have to give up every weekend or every other weekend for 2 days travelling. I mean, I know the lads at RGC in Wales, right? They've got to do five hours every other weekend. Yeah, it's nuts for next to no money. And that makes it a real young man's game as well, because as soon as you get a family, you can't continue with that. And that is my...
Unless you're kind of almost trapped.
Yeah.
And I know a number of blokes who were trapped is maybe the wrong word, but who've got three kids who are not working an amazing job in their normal 9-to-5 and therefore need the extra
400 quid a game,
five grand or whatever it is a year that it contributes.
Yeah. So I'd like to see it regionalised. I'd like to see I'd love to see county rugby mean something again.
Yeah.
Because that used to be the way through to England, is you represented your county. Imagine everyone below Premiership being eligible for county and having these absolutely awesome games which people actually care about. I'd go and watch that.
I think what we can agree on is that, once again, the RFU have not covered themselves in glory in the way that they've gone about their business.
Timing.
I would just like to see... This is what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the people in charge of the championship get together now and realise that this is obviously not a great thing, but there is also an opportunity involved here. And I think they've got to make their league and their patch of rugby self-sustainable, because what this will teach them is they cannot rely on the RFU again. And that is the best way to do it. So no matter what the RFU do in the future, you know that you've got a sustainable sport, and that's only fair for all the fans and all the players and everyone else.
Well, that is a good lesson.
You're going to go to Premiership clubs and say that as well?
No, because it's different, isn't it? Because of the rich owners.
Yeah, but these Championship clubs, the one thing that we haven't even mentioned in this, these Championship clubs have been told one of the objectives is to be ambitious enough to try and be promoted. So I think there's a genuine potential at a law case. If you've sunk, if they ring fence, and I think this is what this has only just popped into my head, but I wonder if the RFU are trying to, like, death by a thousand cuts, but not actually be, not actually get a lawsuit handed to them because they've physically shut the door. If they shut the door and ring fence,
formally ring fence.
Then what they're actually doing is saying, oh, yeah, we told you we wanted that and you've invested loads of money. So rather than a lawsuit coming our way, we'll just make it harder and harder and make the gap bigger and bigger so that when we do eventually ring fence, no one can have any complaints.
Yeah, well, let's just transition this a little bit and go on to something slightly different, because it'll go on to our Premiership chat, which is, you know, the idea of relegation is looking more and more ridiculous. Because, you know, Newcastle are running away with it. Every team that comes down eventually goes back up. You know, it's sort of pointless. On the other hand, if we didn't have the Championship or somewhere for that Premiership team to go down to, as we're finding out with the Premiership this year, the Premiership's awful. I mean, without relegation, it is legitimately awful.
We're looking at the Pro 14. 14. Yeah.
I mean, not that the Pro 14's awful. I'm not saying that. But...
Well, it's the bottom... The top half will always be interesting because you're playing for playoff places.
But the bottom half,
like London Irish got a great win.
Yeah,
and ordinarily against Harlequins, which again they really. I said last week in the podcast, if there's a game London Irish want to win every year, it's this one. They will be going big time for it, and they got a win, and that will mean a lot to every London Irish fan. But I could quite understand a fan of. Anyone but a London Irish fan going, I'm not even looking at what the result is because it means nothing.
Yeah, that's disappointing because this would have been the best relegation season. It's right that Saracens get relegated and all the rest of it. But
two teams should go.
This could have been... I can actually get on board with that because that would make me excited about London Irish beating Harlequins or Leicester grinding out a win in an awful game against Wasps. That actually has meaning this season.
And then Ealing coming up. So, you know, that's quite an exciting story. Instead, we're just going to have Newcastle coming up, and, well, that will be that.
It's back to normal.
So, I can't really... For all my chat about, I'd like to say, a regional championship, which is amateur or rest of it, you couldn't put Newcastle into the North East Regional League and expect it to work. So I don't know how you square that circle, because we absolutely 100% need relegation.
I think this story will bubble away, so I'll have a chance to come back to it.
Ring fence in the two, which was mentioned before.
Yeah.
And Loris Dallaglio.
The bottom of the second still has your Zebras and Dragons in it.
It does.
The equivalent, right?
You're right. Unless you're going to fund them all to a significant level. But then that's a huge amount of money, and RFU
fund everyone else. May as well just have one league then, and fund that.
RFU simply do not have infinite money.
I get it; they're cutting their cloth.
It's the way they've done it.
The timing is bad. So for that, because of the timing, we're going to hear more about this, and I think there will be more fallout. And
I still back my original plan of the sit out club, so we can ring fence and have relegation. Yeah. You have 13 teams, one team every year doesn't play. They've got to make up their own fixtures.
We did get some... one suggestion, I'm not going to be able to find it to give the person credit on Twitter, but someone did reply and say what could happen is there could be like a draft for the players from the losing club for the next season. So Newcastle went down last year and then second bottom get to pick Mark Wilson.
But then what happens when...
And then third bottom... Get to pick another Newcastle
Lord Hammer
player
and Kibberiggy.
They pick a couple of players for the
Sonotti season.
But what happens when that team comes back, they're going to need their players back, right?
Yeah, so they get their players back. So then the players keep playing.
Oh, I see.
But the club has the shame of, like you'd just have tumbleweed across Kingston Park.
It'd be like Gatland when he does the Lions. He gets to learn about how all the England players train and gets the inside knowledge. Well, so you have all these scouts going out.
I think of it more like Japan, right? Imagine if you had Eddie Jones in your club for 12 months with nothing to do.
He or Jamie
Joseph. All they're doing is or Jonathan conditioning. Joseph. You know, it's a grim year. It's brutal for the players. But when that team comes back to the Premiership,
their skill
my
levels
God,
off the chart.
Yeah, and it's cheaper to fund that one on the naughty step than it is to fund the entire Championship.
It is.
It's a lot cheaper.
Well, to the Premiership then, and Steve Parrott on Twitter, friend of the pod, has said, 4 penalties and 2 conversions in horrible conditions at King's Home. Does the boy Steenson have a future?
So who is this? Is this a young academy lad coming through?
Yeah,
young
yeah.
Englishman, I think. Young Englishman.
Oh, Englishman.
Gareth Steenson, young Englishman, definitely.
EPQ?
Yeah, absolutely. Young, talented lad.
What did I say?
EQP. EQP.
Whatever, that one.
So, what's happened to... See, Gloucester and Northampton are just shooting themselves in the foot. They're blowing it.
Did you watch that game on Friday night?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
Gloucester,
grim.
It was pretty grim conditions. Lineouts, as they did all weekend, massively struggle. But Gloucester, that 15, 20-minute period in the second half, where they just gave away 4 or 5 brain-dead penalties at ruck time. Mm. And it was the same thing. There'd be one man lying all over the ball... One guy who's making a half attempt to go for it, but is on his feet. But you just can't do it. And they got pinged time and time again. And this young, talented Englishman, Gareth Steenson, slots penalty after penalty.
He's cool, isn't he, Gareth
and
Steenson?
And following on from the conversation of from last weekend, and we saw a bit more of it this weekend with some of the games, particularly in bad conditions, take the bloody points.
Yeah.
Just take the points.
Nothing annoys me more than not taking points. Who do they think they are?
In bad conditions.
Take your points.
In bad conditions as well.
Particularly in bad
conditions. Every point matters.
And I think there you go, there's a perfect example. Exeter recognised bad conditions, we're going to take every point we can.
Yeah.
Play percentages normal, because they're the team that have pioneered kicking to the corner rather than going for post.
Yeah. And was it not for that stupidity of Gloucester in that 15, 20 minute period just after half time? Their last 15, 20-minute period, when they made the changes and they brought Freddie Clark on and they brought Pelledri on and their heavy reinforcements, they could have won the game. Had they not found themselves so many points down?
Gloucester have got two things, haven't they? They've got big ball carriers.
Yeah.
But they basically operate on their own. You know, if Pelledri goes through, it's not because of some clever scheme. It's because Pelledri is really blinking.
His yards after contact are
unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
He just throws wannabe tacklers off him left, right and centre.
And
brilliant.
Then they've got the Cipriani Atkinson thing, which is class. But
Atkinson sort of didn't start this week.
No.
No, the reason being trees. Is because Cipriani's kicking's been so bad that Billy 12 Trees has had to start.
Yeah. But the 12 Trees Cipriani axis doesn't work anywhere near as well as the Atkinson Sippers axis.
No.
I think Billy might have to go back to 13.
Oh, but then that's.
That was last year. It was Sippers, Atkinson.
But it's not good enough.
Billy.
Yeah,
it's
not good enough. Chris Harris seems to have messed things up a little bit.
Like Tino Asprilla when he went to Newcastle.
One thing too many, in a way. Because he plays differently to everyone else. He's a bit bigger, a bit more abrasive.
Direct.
Yeah. Whereas I think of the Newcastle. God.
Gloucester.
Gloucester back line. I think everyone's got a bit of X factor there. He doesn't have X factor, but he's a little bit more reliable.
And he doesn't wear long cycling shorts.
No, and he just gets on with it. The other thing is I think teams kind of know what's going to happen now.
So what Gloucester actually need is another kicker. So not Billy 12 Trees, not Cipriani. Either a French scrum half,
yes,
or get Greg Laidlaw back, but
no,
I don't think that's going to work.
I think that's a different.
Or
tough
Lee Halfpenny.
But I tell you, who can kick? Who they don't have kicking? Woodward.
Can he?
Yeah, he kicked his way nearly to keeping Bristol up.
He did kick for Bristol.
He kicked for Bristol and for Hurricanes.
But Warren Mullis, our mate Warren from the American
How are you,
Rugby
Warren?
Podcast. Warren over
we need
there.
To have some beers with Warren
we
sometime
do.
Soon.
Well, Atlanta have got a Major League Rugby team. We should go and stay with Warren.
Well, if when the Jabronis play?
The Austin Gilbronis.
Gilgronis.
Gilgronis.
Jabronis.
The Jabronis.
Open a can of whoop-ass, Jabroni.
By the way, the Jabronis lost. Don't swing on my antique chairs.
Sorry.
Gilgronis.
Yeah.
Did anyone see the hit from... I think it was a Gilgronis flanker.
It was a Gilgronis flanker on Bastero.
Oh, good.
Stopped him
he got
dead.
Ended.
By the way... The New York kit is good in principle, isn't it? It looks horrible on.
I like it. It's like a baseball jersey.
I like it.
I like the ambition. It's completely
thin
different.
Pinstripe, if you're in great shape, looks brilliant. Stretched out over Bastereau's current New York
so
enhanced
many
rig.
Of the, so many of the people who...
Like contour lines
so many, of the people who this weekend have been saying be kind and stuff were absolutely savaging Bastereau for his body shape last week.
Yeah, I like Bastereau. The kit because it's so unusual. That it might stick.
I like
but,
it. Anyway, Warren Morris says, with the weekend's results, is it officially time to say it's Gloucester's year next year?
I think Gloucester's year is next year.
I think we can formally agree next year for Gloucester.
Yeah. One or two more signings, maybe.
They've got to get someone who kicks who is not Danny Cipriani not Billy Twelvetrees.
If they just came out one day, like just trotted out on support with Cipriani, like the whole gap, and they just played worn-out rugby for the entire game, they would win by about 50 points because no one would expect it. They've all been conditioned for the Cipriani.
Phase one, Ben Morgan. Phase two, Jake Pelledri.
Round the
phase
corner.
Three, phase three, Mostert.
Ackerman.
Yeah. Keep going. 50 points and then go back to Cipriani thing.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good win. That was a good win for Exeter.
That was.
In tough condition. And Hogg, that try by Hogg.
Oh, that was class.
Was absolutely class.
He seems to be worth his money.
He's
for Exeter.
Well, they're making him play. Yeah, they're getting their money out of him.
You have to when you sign that deal for that amount of money. I assume it's a lot of money. I don't know.
It will be.
Rumoured half a mil.
Won't quite be Finn Russell money, but it would be good money. Yeah.
You don't have the option of having internationals off.
But that for him and for Scotland will be really important. That one try.
For practicing putting it down.
Yeah, just get it over the line. But it's a break from his own 22. Mm. Freddie Clark. That's a lesson for the Gloucester defensive line. I think he had... who did he have inside him? He had a prop inside him. I think Mostert outside him. But he shot out of the line on Hogg. And Hogg just says, thank you, skip, accelerate, round the outside. 1-2 with Simmons.
Now, I've actually met Stuart Hogg. And he's a surprisingly big... I don't know what his stats are.
Let's have a look.
He's a surprisingly like hefty man. Mm. Big
he's
hands
quite
as well.
Thick set, isn't he?
Not as big. Not his hands aren't quite as chunky as Quade Cooper's, who's got enormous hands.
So what do you reckon? Height and weight?
5'10" and 15 stone, something like that.
Tim, any advance?
I'm going to be honest. I haven't been listening. I don't know who we're talking about.
Stuart Hogg.
Stuart Hogg. 5'9", and I'll go for 13 stone 9.
JB closer. So 5'11" listed and 93 kg, which is 40, just over 14.5 stone.
That's hefty.
Yeah. He is.
He is quite thick set,
so
isn't he?
He actually stopped me in the
two C's.
Yeah, I was having a tour around the Glasgow training complex, which is really, really cool actually. And he stopped me in the things. And, hi, I'm Stuart. That's what he does.
Hi, JB, I'm Stuart.
He did not know who I was. not like Sam Underhill. Sam Underhill knew.
He's a good lad.
Well, another team who sort of have got a fair bit of stick, but find themselves in a really good position is Bath.
Yeah, who's laughing now? Not me.
Yeah. It's a globally significant position as well, I'd like to say.
I would say it's globally significant, yeah. Good stuff. I didn't think this team was any good. I'm still wondering if they are any good. I mean, actually, I genuinely do think that because...
You get Anthony Watson, Joe Thockley-Singer,
Jonathan Joseph
back in that back line.
Sam Underhill in the forwards...
Yeah, don't get me wrong. And Faletau. Don't get me
and
wrong.
Tom Dunn.
They've always had good players. So let's not just list the players because they've always had.
No, but they're performing well and they've been performing well without a fair few top players.
I just don't know if any team in the top four at the moment are any good, with the exception of Exeter.
Exeter.
I mean, they all are. They're basically all the same.
And Bristol, I love Pat Lamb. Pat Lamb must have been special for him and Bruce Rayana going back to Northampton.
Of course, in both.
And but when Pat Lam picked up the microphone and went to celebrate the comeback victory around the BT Sport desk, he just kept going, awful, awful, awful. That was awful. He wasn't happy with Bristol's performance, but they showed a bit of grit. But how did Northampton throw that one away?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Is Northampton losing it from that position as well?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair to Bristol, they kept in the fight. Northampton had the one try, and after that, they didn't look particularly dangerous.
But they were 14 points up, weren't they? At home, after whatever it was, 50-odd, 60 minutes. That's to lose those games.
Chris Vuey nearly scored two tries. I cannot believe it. By the way, he's in my fantasy team, so that'll be...
You've managed to sneak a win anyway somehow. With a rubbish score, you still managed to sneak a win. You're so...
Sneaky.
Sneaky, yeah.
Professional, mate. Professional.
Professional. Grind it out.
Good teams are teams that win when they're not playing well.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what me and the boys
well,
did.
Well, this season. Here's a question that I think is a good one to throw at Saints from Mark Spinky, 22 on Twitter. Can Northampton Saints seriously challenge with a scrum that is dominated most weeks? Lots of money spent on the Franks brothers for a scrum that goes backwards.
Do you know, it's funny you say that. I don't know if I said this the other day, but talking to some players after playing Northampton, they said the same thing. The way that Northampton scrummage, it feels like they do certain things which indicate to professional props that they're not very confident with their scrum.
Okay.
Which I think is a fascinating insight.
I'd love to know what those things are. No, well, not that they really mean anything to me, but...
Well, I mean, I don't even... I play front row, and I don't really understand what was said. But allegedly, when they bind, they don't give any ground. So, you know, sometimes you bind, and then you give a bit of ground and settle down.
Yeah.
They bind, and they stay engaged as hard as they can because they don't have any confidence in going forward. Now, it didn't really make much sense to me, but I'm literally just repeating verbatim what was said. But it's interesting that the opposition props noticed that.
Curious.
Yes, intriguing.
But Chris Boyd won Super Rugby without really bothering with the scrum, so...
And he does think about the scrum as purely a restart.
He's wrong on that?
Not as a penalty-winning machine, but you have to be able to do better than they are doing.
If it's a penalty-conceding machine, then it's a big problem.
Well, it's proven that way. elsewhere... Oh, sorry, go on.
It is interesting, isn't it, the amount of money they've sunk into that front row. It's not a cheap front row.
Well, the Franks brothers, particularly Owen Franks,
who is, or
certainly was for the last 10 years, arguably the best tight end in the world.
Well, I've always thought about Owen Franks. One of the more impressive things that I've seen from him is getting absolutely battered in the scrum, but not conceding a penalty. I think that is like the ultimate front row skill, is getting absolutely hammered and not conceding the penalty.
There was one game, I can't remember which one it was, there was one game where... the referee just did not want to get... The scrum just totally, totally disintegrated. And the ref did not want to give a penalty and just put his hands up. And like, the ball's still in. Well, the ball's kind of still in. No players are bound. It's like just the front rows are bound.
Well,
and everyone's looking at each
game?
Other. No, it was this weekend. What game was Craig Maxwell-Keys reffing? Was that the Friday night game? Or was it Saturday's game? I've watched too much rugby.
Yeah. I can't remember either.
But he just kind of, play on, lads. No one's bound. Play on.
Was he at Bristol?
No, I think it was Friday.
I think it was Friday's game.
Because Saturday was Carl Dixon. And yeah, let's talk about that one at Welford Road. Was again.
Don't care. sorry. What's riding on this? I mean,
Well, there is an argument that there's only 10 points from fourth to Leicester.
Yeah, and that's the only real relevance, isn't there? That everyone is basically the same. But there's no jeopardy.
I know. There is no jeopardy. I mean, this is a game.
Committed game, yeah.
And you want these teams to be building something, as in putting performances together, because everyone's got an eye on next year. So you're going to be trying combinations that are going to work for next year. In this game, neither team is really going to learn anything about any of the combinations they tried, because...
Nope.
The conditions were absolutely awful. Neither team could restart the game. The lineouts were all over the place from both teams. Like, neither team were doing anything good.
But particularly, Wass had a bad time of it at lineout. Poor Tommy Taylor.
Yeah. And Tommy Taylor, has he played many games back this season?
No, he's
been injured for a long time.
Rob Webber's retired.
He has.
Which is, by the way, huge news. and maybe they need another hooker.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, they've got the...
Prodigal Son Returns.
I think they've sunk a chunk of money into...
Go on, I'm listening.
No, they've sunk a chunk of money into the Angry Warthog.
Hacker.
And I'm sure there's another South African hooker they can bring over.
There'll be a few more.
I'm sure the powers that be will have their eyes on someone. I'm pretty certain that there's a new prop that's on his way. At least one. what were we talking about then?
Wasps and against
Sale,
Leicester.
Sale. That'd be a nice bit, do you think?
Yeah. But I hope he stays at Wasps. His blonde hair goes well with that yellow.
Does go well, yeah.
But fair play. Leicester, without all their England boys, dug in.
They did.
Showed a bit of dog.
Yeah.
Tom Hardwick had a tough old game.
He did.
He had a few wayward passes, a few missed kicks, both for touch.
But Hogg had a defining moment for Exeter. Vianu had a defining moment for Leicester.
He did, on the back of the Umaga mistake. Yes. The two tens who were in terrible conditions under the pump. And yeah, he picked up and dealt with it nicely.
Do you think there's an argument to say it's really, really difficult to be a backup for an amazing ten?
Oh, the drop-off from Ford to Hardwick this week. I've not seen a huge amount of Hardwick.
No practice time. Nobody really cares about what he thinks. So it's all about
what George Ford would do in this position.
If George Ford thinks this is a good thing for George Ford to do, George Ford, and that's exactly how it should be for the record.
Yeah.
So Tom Hardwick has literally no input into how this is going to go
down. The patterns, the plays, the shape.
Which probably George Ford has designed to a certain degree with his coaches.
But George Ford's designed based on George Ford's skill set, which very few people have.
Tom, you're up.
You're running this.
Off you go, mate.
Good luck. Oh, and by the way, it's 50-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah.
And it's going to be pouring down for the whole game.
I'm pretty sure Tom Hardwick's a much better player than...
I am absolutely certain he's a better player than this game.
And if you think about it, you know, providing George Ford stays fit, the only time Tom Hardwick gets any game time is between November and February. Yeah.
Because actually, George Ford is Do you know George Ford is the most capped player by Eddie Jones?
Yeah, I saw that.
That's amazing, isn't
he's
it?
He's played in...
50 out 51.
He's playing pretty much every game.
Good innings.
That is.
Very good innings. And a few of those from the bench.
Yeah.
But fewer than you'd think, actually. Because the majority of the time has been Ford and Farrell as the axis.
Just to disprove my point, Manu Vinopola.
Yeah.
The drop-off from Owen Farrell to him should be substantial. But actually, he does all right.
No, he's doing okay. And the drop-off for the whole of the Saracens... first team to the second team, you would have thought would be bigger than Sale made
look. Walter C. Ladwig III on Twitter says, lads, at Rugby Podcast, what should we conclude from the fact that the Saracens B team easily dismantled what was the number three team in the league?
They are still on the number three team in the league, thank you very much. Not that I care, but still. Neutrals, that is important.
Is it now?
They are still.
Have Bristol leapfrogged Bath then?
No, but Bristol aren't even top four.
Bristol are fourth.
Oh, are they? Oh,
Bristol have overtaken Bath.
Right.
Yeah.
It was. I don't know what to say about it.
What would a neutral say about it?
I think a neutral would be disappointed. I think many neutrals would be very, very disappointed. They would wonder what on earth the neutrals were doing, taking down a full team and somehow losing to Saracens. But
Sale have got to start winning on the road.
Yeah,
to be a force.
I mean,
they're doing very well, and the league is really open, and teams are beating everyone else. So lots of teams lose away from home. I get it, but particularly they put out. If you're going to beat Saracens, this was the weekend to beat Saracens.
Strikes me, well, actually, last week was the weekend to beat Saracens. Anyway,
I mean that was a full team versus a C team, or not even a C team for Saracens.
I would suggest that how Sale are playing right now would not cut top four or even indeed top six last year or the year before. This league has evened out to such an extent now that, you know, I said at the start of a few minutes ago, I don't think any of the top four are good except for Exeter. Exeter are 100 million miles ahead of everyone else.
And Exeter are not playing their best rugby this season as well.
No.
But it's, you're right.
Salary cap makes for a much, much better overall competition
for the teams that adhere to it.
Yeah, and for the teams that adhere to it, and when there's relegation. But actually,
the quality overall on aggregate.
Well, I don't know if it's the quality. I don't know if the quality's gone down. It's just so competitive. It's so hard to be dominant every week.
Yeah.
So, that's the difficulty, isn't it? And so, you get... Teams seem to get on a run. They'll have two or three really good performances. Northampton, say, earlier on in the season. And then...
And now Bristol have had a couple of great wins.
But they had a few great wins, then a few surprising losses, and then a few more great wins.
Mm. Yeah, if you can deal with Sale's physicality, you can beat them. And I think that's probably what happened. Once you got hold of the Dupreez.
I was thinking for start to click a few weeks back. When they do click, I think
the coach hasn't quite caught up yet with the fact that everyone's equal. Everyone's just trying to do their own thing, and I think you need to react a lot more to what the opposition are doing. Does that make sense? Yeah, probably.
And on the flip side, I would also point out, when you look at that Saracens team, the one thing that everyone's been very quick to say, and I understand it, and it's rightly so, they broke the laws and all that, but everyone's been quick to go, oh, they just bought their way to the titles. This weekend is an example of how good the Saracens coaching is.
Interesting, intriguing. Saracens are recruiting again.
Yeah.
Championship players.
Championship players are going hard on good championship players. I admire Saracens so much. Like, they're already sort of scoping out how are we going to do this? How are we going to do it to the best of our ability?
Apparently, Jinx a la Daily coffee shop is going to be open for business in St. Albans because Jamie George and Elliot Daly are two players that it's thought are going to stick around. Ben Earl rumoured to be going to Bristol for a season loan.
So Ben Earl is exactly the type of player who needs to be playing back in the Premiership. So... Jamie George, Itoje, Farrell.
They could actually benefit from not being there.
Exactly. In a Lions year, they will benefit from having less wear and tear. They'll play 10, 12 England games, half a dozen Lions games, and maybe four Championship games.
Guys like
Ben Earl, they need, because they're the step away from it. If they want to be playing for England, they've got to be playing Premiership.
Yeah, Lazowski is the kind of guy right on the cut. He needs to be back in the Prem.
He needs to be back in the
Prem.
Why
he'll get
someone like Singleton has to be back in the Prem. Someone like Ezekwe or Kapoku, if they've got like the ambition of playing top level.
Maybe Singleton to Sale might be the answer.
As a hook, yeah.
I'll
tell you what, from...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot... We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This game, Wollstonecraft. He had a great game.
Yeah, he did. He did play very well.
Maybe Sale re-sign Chris.
Stop talking about Sale.
Sale sided hookers. You're obsessed.
I like talking about front rows.
You do.
There you go. Just an enormous amount of respect for Saracens. I mean, to actually get themselves up for this. I mean, that it speaks volumes, doesn't it, about that camp? That despite everything that's gone on, despite all the England players going, despite getting beat by the exact same team last week.
Despite another fine hitting them.
Yeah, they put themselves together.
Another 50 grand last week. Yeah.
And that isn't, by the way, that's not a team that has breached the salary cap. That is just a team of good individuals that pulled together and won a game. And it's awesome to see.
And if
you gave the salaries of the players who were on that pitch, the 23s, that Saracens team will be probably significantly lower than that Sale team.
Oh, yeah. miles lower.
And
even allowing for the salary, putting that to one side, still... To find the sense of purpose and meaning that Saracens squad are managing to find to draw out performances like that and get togetherness like that is quite, I think it's remarkable.
It is. Because they are better people than me. because I would have thrown every game. I'd screw you all.
I remember listening to you. Yeah. I think it was while I was away, and you're like, no, I just wouldn't. I'm not going to fulfil any of the fixtures.
Yeah,
if that's me.
Do you know what? I don't think I would.
Toys out of the pram.
I would. Do you know what? I'd call it off, off last minute. So, like, I'd make them travel, and then I'd call it off. Like, no, yeah, we just don't have the players. Sorry about that.
Sorry, lads.
Sorry, can't do it. I would be so, Nigel Ray, for all the alleged things he's done wrong, is a remarkably patient character.
I will say, for all the things he has done wrong, not allegedly, for all the things the club has done wrong.
Okay, for all the,
because I know some people seem to, every time we praise some of the stuff that Saracens do, some people seem to think that we praise everything that they do.
Yeah. There's no way.
No, I'm saying,
morons, they were stupid, and it was bloody dodgy.
But if Bristol do get Ben Earl, then Semi Radrada, Charles Piatow, Harry Thacker, Nathan Hughes, Ben Earl in the same team.
Do you know something I like?
We're talking contenders.
Something that I like, and it's not been spoken about that much, but Mitch Eady going back to Bristol, I think, is a nice signing. When he was playing really well at Bristol, he was ace.
Yeah, and I've not seen enough of him.
To use your phrase, not mine, he's a concussion boy.
Is he? He's a pure concussion
boy. Game changer.
It's a romantic tale going back to your hometown.
He was good in the squad. Old highlights.
Yeah, but he's not going to be starting for them. They've got Nathan Hughes and
Ben
Earl.
And Lua Tua. That's a pretty nice
back. He's a good guy, and I like guys going back home.
Tommy Taylor, though?
If he wants to go back, I like Tommy Taylor.
Tommy Taylor and Cruz.
I just feel sorry for Dyke. I don't want everyone to leave Wasps still, all their good players. Yeah. Anyway. Right. Ben White try saving tackle, a few people have mentioned.
Didn't see it. Was it good?
So I assume that was in the second. I watched the whole of the first half really. I was really interested and involved in that, but it was terrible. And then an actual Leicester Tigers fan came round to watch the second half with me. And we ended up chatting and not watching any of the game, or very little of the game, other than the Vianu try. You're not a Leicester Tigers fan.
Fine.
You were a Bath and Sale and Leicester fan in the past.
Bath admirer. I'm
and an Exeter admirer.
And Exeter, yes. Sorry, not Bath admirer. And Exeter.
And a Nigel Ray admirer.
I'm in neutral, as you all know.
Here's a question that I was thinking about while I was away. Reminded myself by thinking about you doing the podcast without me. So, Johnny Gray was he formally announced as Exeter, or was it just a rumour?
Yes, no, it's
formally announced. So, is there a player who is as big a name or bigger, but exciting, than Johnny Gray?
That's a great question. That is a great question. I think you'd need to look in the world.
So if you're going to go from 1 to
100... High-profile boring.
Correct. Exactly that.
Like Vincent Cock?
Vincent Cock's more exciting in my mind.
For what reason?
I've seen him topless.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I'm not saying he's boring, but like props I'd be looking at.
So the one in my head that I got to was Dan Cole, who I think is a slightly bigger name and less exciting.
Exceptionally dull.
Yeah.
As a signing. You couldn't get excited about that.
No. We're going to give even more penalties away.
Can you imagine the signing unveiling video someone would do for that? Like spoofing a movie or something.
He seems quite funny, a very dry, very funny bloke. His stuff with Joe Marler on the World Cup camp.
Oh, but Joe Marler. That's reminded me. And
he would not be in the category, but he has a bigger name. I'd say he's more exciting than Johnny Gray.
So I'll answer your question first, and then I'll come back to Joe Marler. Maybe his brother. Maybe his brother can carry a bit.
Yeah, he's Richie is more exciting in my mind.
Bigger name.
I'm going round thinking of like just
Brad Shields.
Dull six. I was thinking of six.
Brad Shields won Super Rugby with my beloved Hurricanes.
Yeah, but have you seen him play? It's not exciting, is it?
He's a Super Rugby player.
I can't
Captain Bowden Barrett to win in Super Rugby.
Chris Robshaw. If Chris Robshaw moved to your club, that wouldn't be super exciting, would it?
He's a bigger name, England captain. I'd say he's slightly more exciting.
He's a bigger name and slightly more exciting. That's a challenge. That rugby podcast. Who would be a bigger name...
But less exciting
than Johnny.
Just a guy that hits rucks continually. Do you know who would be the all-time most boring player? As a player, not as a human being. And the biggest name. Martin Johnson. The most boring. Yeah. Doesn't want the ball.
But then he's got like the off-field leadership stuff.
Which is quite exciting.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah, but so Johnny Gray, hasn't he?
Why is he not captain?
Good point. Is he not? I thought he's had Captain Scotland or something.
Hogg's captain?
Yeah.
Which is, because there's not many fullbacks who play as captain, because you're so far away from the action for a lot of the time.
You have to have a 30-metre sprint, shuttle sprint, to go and mither the ref. In fact, that would be the solution for rugby. Make every captain automatically the fullback.
Fullback.
And all the back chat to the ref.
No
might
one
stop.
Else can talk to him. You've got to run 30 yards, and if your fullback deems it necessary.
Oh, yeah, and then he's Wales run. Got the ever persuasively halfpenny. The ever talkatively halfpenny. No thanks. Right. Joe Marler. So, it was brought to my attention, I'm going to name drop actually, by Charlie Morgan. That there is a documentary about a game. Is anyone aware of this?
On Newsround.
BBC.
Newsround. By the way, isn't Newsround for kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, well, this isn't for kids. I can tell you right now, this is not for kids.
Not talking like your kids, talking like my kids.
I don't think it's for your kids, frankly.
Okay.
What's going on?
So if you're wondering, I'm not. That's not a slight on JB's kids. He just has very small children.
Yeah.
I have slightly larger children.
Yeah. No, they've not got horrible learning not horrible special needs or anything. They could understand it if they're the right age.
Not your kids, David.
Yeah, it's a heritable trait. What was I saying? So the BBC have made a documentary about Harlequins.
Can we make a note of this? JB compliments BBC shocker.
This is
a rarity, this one.
So the thing itself, I really enjoyed. So I recommend everyone go and watch it. The problem is, you'll never, ever find it. So what would you do if you wanted to watch a BBC documentary about Harlequins rugby team? What would you search for?
I'd go to iPlayer
type
Harlequins.
Correct. Okay, it doesn't come up. What else would you say?
Rugby.
Yeah, you would. No, none of those things will get the Harlequins documentary as a search result. Neither Harlequins nor rugby appears in the title of the show. So good luck with that. It's called Tries. You've got to type in Tries or something. I can't remember exactly what it's called. But it's really, really good. It's a proper behind-the-scenes
How long is it?
About 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
It goes from pre-season, and all the England boys are away, all the way through to a big game... 26 or whatever on now, and then obviously the Saracens salary cap stuff breaks in the middle of it. Now there is an element of, we all know what Joe Marler thinks anyway, and we all know what Danny Kerr thinks anyway, but they're very, very candid about it to camera. It's just really, I just go and watch it. It's a really, really good
cool thing. Good heads up.
Now,
I'd also recommend Narcos season 2. Really good. I'm smashing my way through it.
Can I just say, the reason I'm so shocked as a Newsround thing is the amount of swearing involved is enormous.
Really?
Yeah, it's enormous. It's just pure swearing, and it's drinking, and there's beer spraying everywhere.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's a bloody good doc, but it's definitely not Newsround. That's for sure. Yeah, it is a news one, isn't it? This is for kids.
I'm sure that's what I had in my head. I think I've seen like a tweet or two for it.
The only criticism I'll have of it is...
Not the swearing or drinking for kids.
No, it was...
No, more of that, please.
Yeah, it was three questions about mental health, because we have to talk about it, don't we? We have to talk about it. And then the sort of implicit sort of, oh, it's very macho, isn't it? As if that isn't the downside, we like it. So, oh, it's very alpha, it's very macho, isn't it? Does that have a problem with mental health? No, it doesn't. Move on.
They probably wouldn't have got the funding unless they agreed to include that.
Yeah, it's got to have some work.
Got greenlit. Have they used one of their phrases? Yes, brilliant. Yes, you can have the
really
money.
Enjoyable thing. Can it stand on its own 2 feet? Yes, in terms of enjoyment, but not wordiness. Right, throw that in. And the other great takeaway from this: the standard of food in Harlequins looks bloody brilliant.
Oh, I've seen some other stuff from Quinn's. I think Wasps have got a superb show. Some of the Bath stuff.
Yeah.
I've been at London Irish's training ground filming a Rugby Tonight on Tour thing. The food there looked outstanding. The awful thing that I couldn't get past was there was no coffee machine.
What?
It was, I had to have instant coffee in a foam cup.
What did you throw it at someone?
What?
But apparently the coffee machine is in the changing room.
So if you go to
the players have it in, yeah, their own in the changing rooms. Come on.
Exactly.
Come on. I want a flat white, not a bloody foam cup instant.
So if you go to sale, right, you'll help yourself to a brew. They don't call it coffee. It's a brew. It's Northern. and they've got a little thing, a little like tea. Urn. And yeah. you've been there, that's what you do. But they do have a real coffee machine as well. Again, it's hidden in the players' room. You've just got to know where to look. But the food, just, it's worth looking at this documentary to look at the standard of food the Harlequins boys get. This chef, apparently, is the ex-England football chef.
Oh, nice.
It's awesome. In fact, I'd quite like to interview him.
Yeah. That would be quite a cool interview, actually. Yeah. Get him on Dungeon.
Exactly.
I can ask, well, if you want to talk about like nutrition and rugby, then I could make a recommendation for a rugby dungeon who actually would be really interesting. James Hudson.
Oh.
I was at uni at Bath with him. Played for Bath and London Irish and Gloucester, Newcastle. Mm. And he was he's like a biological...
Biochemist?
Biochemist. Yeah. And well,
what does he know?
He does kind of nutrition stuff for rugby, I think.
Ah, so, yeah. Interesting. Well, I've done Charlie Morgan and Charlie Walker in Zebre. He listens to that on Tuesday. And I think
that'll be a good one, because after Charlie Morgan did the piece with him talking about how he went from being on a very nice deal at Quinn's to, Gustard not really wanting to pay him what he was previously on.
Basically, Gustard wants wingers that can catch balls in the air, is what it comes down to. Anyway, it's all in the interview, so you can listen to that next week.
Well, let's get back to Six Nations and looking ahead to rugby that is coming up. So, this is a very, very big weekend of Six Nations rugby, this one. Let's deal with Scotland-Italy and get that one out of the way, the Wooden Spoon Bowl.
So that is the first game of the weekend as well.
It's the first game of the weekend as
2:15 on Saturday. So, Italy's performance against France last weekend, that was the game I enjoyed most out of the three that I watched.
Really?
Yeah, it was a really good game. And I think Italy, they scored three tries. They were unlucky not to get either a losing bonus point, which they lost thanks to some magic from Baptiste Saran, or the fourth try point, because they had a few opportunities to do it. So I think Italy, assuming the conditions are better than the Scotland-England game, Italy will be going out to score tries. And it should make for an entertaining game,
I agree.
Might not be a snooze fest that you might think.
Will Scotland get the tries? Will the weather be terrible? I'm so hoping the weather.
What fumble is Stuart Hogg going to do this week?
If it's a storm beginning with E next weekend, what are we going for? Like, this should have been Storm Kira Part 2.
Yeah,
Storm Kira Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. Oh, they should have called it Storm. They should have called it. I saw someone mention this. I thought it was a great point. They missed an open goal, not calling it Daniels. Stormy Daniels.
Oh, nice.
How many blown off jokes could you have made?
Damn it.
I like Storm Dennis because it does remind me of It's Always Sunny. Yeah. So, makes me happy.
Most underrated comedy of all time, that.
Love it.
Do you know what I've started doing recently? I started watching, what the hell is it? What's the Larry David one?
Curb Your Enthusiasm is my favourite show of all time.
Right, so I don't bother watching the shows. I just watch the highlights on YouTube continually. I mean, there's just like hours and hours of just punchlines and highlights. I don't need to know what happened.
You don't need the setup to the gag. You just want the gag.
It's glorious. The best thing about that show is it's sort of these things happen towards the start, and you're like, you're wondering which one of those things is going to come back and bite him on the ass at the end. I love that show.
Yeah. He often gives it's almost like a knowing look when there's the setup early on that I'm going to regret that later.
Hey.
Right, next game.
So how do you see that we're going? Italy, Scotland?
Give me Scotland.
Scotland will win.
Scotland have to win.
Italy will be putting everything on this.
Yeah, this is their winnable fixture.
Yep.
Give me Scotland, but give me Italy to get at least one, possibly two bonus points.
I'm going to go for Scotland narrowly. I would love to see Italy get a win.
Poor Scotland if they do.
Yeah.
I mean, so if Italy win, that might actually be Finsel's best route back to playing in a Scotland shirt. Because his best route is Gregor Townsend being fired right now. And Italy win makes that one step closer.
Yeah, I can.
So Finn Russell is going to.
What does Scotland get? I mean, I know Finn Russell's being paid well at Racing, but what does Scotland get per game? Because if it was 25 bags a game...
It's about $6,000, I think.
If it was 25 grand a game, like England... Oh, go on.
Gregor, I know I've said a few things, and you've said a few things, but can we make up?
They should, agree. They should make up, and they should play.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, the Six Nations could be France's to lose if England beat Ireland and France beat Wales.
France will beat Wales.
Do you think?
100%.
I don't think they will.
I think they will.
Where is it?
Cardiff. In Cardiff.
Oh, no, no. Wales will win that. No.
Give me Wales.
Give me France. France Grand Slam.
France, they showed some fragility against Italy.
It's a brand new team. It's a brand new team, brand new coaches, and they turned over the World Cup finalists.
Yeah, England played badly, and Wales at home will not play as badly as England played.
But this is a new Welsh team. This isn't Gatland's Wales.
And Wales came closer to beating South Africa than England did.
Gatland's Wales, okay, which will. Yeah, well, it's going to haunt us now, isn't it, for the rest of our lives, that we're lucky enough to see this and we'll never see it again. But Gatland's Wales nearly lost to France in the quarters. They nearly lost to France last time in Paris. And in fact, if it wasn't for Johan Uge...
They were 16-0 down at half-time,
it's the biggest comeback that they've ever had. It's not going to happen again. And I think this France is better than last France, and this Wales is worse than last Wales.
Well, the fly-half situation is a worrying one for Wales.
It is.
Yeah. If they don't have Bigger, that is a massive blow.
And they don't have Anscombe. Anyway,
yeah, they don't have Henson, of course.
Henson's out. Stephen Jones isn't available.
He's coaching.
Yeah, who is the next? Is it the guy from Blues? What's his face?
Jared Evans.
Jared Evans. I liked how he played. Actually,
he did all right when he came on.
He did.
But he's not Dan Bigger.
No one has Dan Bigger. Owen Farrell is not Dan Bigger. Owen Farrell wants to be the player that Dan Bigger is. I know I've said this before. I've been proven right 100 times out of 100 on this one.
If we ignore the Lions, 100 times out of 100.
Oh, yeah, but only because Dan Bigger wasn't can't play 12, or doesn't want to play 12. so there you go.
So you're saying France?
With Bigger Wales. Without Bigger, it's much harder to call. But I still think Wales at home.
Yeah.
Roof on.
It makes no difference.
I still think Wales at home.
They've lost their substance. Maybe they win. Maybe it's like the dead cat bounce and they throw it about a bit. No, they're not. France are going to win this. France are too good. And also, France have got probably the world's best defence coach who knows Wales or the players inside out.
He does, yeah.
He has the keys to unlock anyone.
Or
lock them down, I might add.
He has
both
asked,
unlock them.
Unlock
Sean Edwards, by the way.
At will.
Yeah. Sean Edwards, by the way, has asked referees to learn a bit more French to be able to talk to his players. I would like to. He should only be able to do that if he comes out and does a press conference in French.
He did. You'll see it.
I saw him say.
Well, he said some words in French.
Oui, yeah. Whatever oui. Whatever he said.
Yeah. I do think. Dual point here. It'd probably be a little bit easier for the French team to control the language barrier if they just teach the French players to speak English.
Which most of them probably do because of the number of South Africans and Kiwis and Aussies. And
most of it is first language, yeah.
Yeah.
And the second one would be, it was a good life lesson for the French to learn English, so why not?
To learn Wigan.
Yeah, Wiganese. Tim?
Hold on. Line speed.
Oh, no, sorry. Let's do that in French. En français. Oh, come on.
Hmm.
Oh, I'm trying to do. Oh, there we go. That one.
Line speed.
Wow.
He's not going to pick that up very quickly.
Give him a few months to pick that one up.
Did you know it was line speed?
No, that can't be right. I think what I might have done is just got them to say it in a French voice by accident.
Line speed.
We got some big games anyway coming up. There we go.
Yeah. So there's that game, and then so Sunday at 3:00, England.
Oh, sorry. Here we go.
Vitesse de la ligne.
There you go.
There you go. That made difference, isn't it?
Line speed.
So
sorry. Fucking.
The most tasty of all these games is obviously England Ireland.
Yeah, because they've both beat each other away in the preceding 2 years.
Yeah.
So Ireland took England apart in Twickenham as the jewel in the crown of JB's downfall 2018.
Yep. Beautiful day.
And England took Ireland apart in the start of their 2019 downfall.
Oh, that was so beautiful.
Both these teams are the same. They are identical to each other. I mean, there's a bit of the... In fact, they're so similar Even the coaching lineage is slightly similar. So you've got the old Farrell effect on England, which is then expressed via Gustard, and you know some of that must still be around. And you know all the Saracens lads.
Well, the Saracens link like Borthwick and Farrell.
Yeah, and then you've got Ireland, who are obviously coached by Farrell. They are a big, abrasive bunch of forwards. They like to carry the ball. They love their defending. They are the same team in different jerseys.
So how's it going to match up?
I have no idea. If a team has a slight edge, if they play slightly better, they will win. It's basically who want. I think it comes down almost to who wants it more.
Manu is back and available.
Good.
That makes a big difference.
It does, because you saw in the game last year, the 2019 game.
Oh yeah.
Just even when he's not got the ball. Like the first try, the Johnny May try, which was a magnificent pass from Farrell straight across Tuolagi's face to Daly, who breaks through, pops to May. May glides in after 3 minutes or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
But the space afforded to Farrell and Daly because of the presence of Tuolagi is so important.
I wonder if he goes back to having Owen Farrell at 10 and Manu at 12. Because it was so effective first time round. Hang on, did they do that first time round? Yeah, they did, didn't they?
In 2019, yeah. I can't remember.
I'm sure they did.
I might have Slade.
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah.
I think I'd go with the same thing.
Slade's not available.
Tuolagi and JJ.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or do you move Daly in?
Ford is playing so well.
Ford is playing well.
So I would go 10, 12, just 13. Ford, Farrell, Tuolagi.
It feels a lot more aggressive when you have Farrell at 10.
It does.
And it feels like you mean business.
And Ford, I think he's slightly more conservative as well, because he takes pressure off Farrell, but he also takes pressure off Furbank at 15, because he often drops deep,
right back.
And he's a good receiver and a good decision maker and an excellent kicker. So it's a less aggressive, more like conservative approach, because Ford is...
Yeah,
he can
Ireland,
take pressure off the
and
six,
Ireland
the
are going to kick. Mark my words, they will just chuck bombs up. Oh, if I said something, have I used war language? Uh-oh. Sorry.
It's fascinating, isn't it? It's going to be one of those games where work rate is going to come into it massively. You know, just simple things, kick chasing. You know, it's a sort of game that I really like, rather than skill based.
Well, I think there will be, because Ireland. The one thing they're doing more is they are, on the odd occasion, spreading it a bit wider, a bit earlier than they would under Schmidt. That's what it's appeared to me. So, like, it was Earl's pass to Lama in the Wales game, where he almost gets man and ball. They're trying to go wide, quick. He's almost taken man and ball, but he manages to throw, in a half second, throw a 30-metre pass out to Lama, who then makes an extra 40 yards. So I think there might be a few more skills on show if the conditions suit it. If they don't suit it, both teams will stick it up the jumper.
Yeah.
And like England.
Which I like.
So England against Scotland, they didn't throw a single offload. Not one.
Hang on. But that was like biblical weather.
It was biblical weather. Scotland still chucked a few in, but it does show that England, they are going to play according to the conditions, and if the conditions dictate it's a day to grind it out,
When I think of England, I think England can beat anyone when they play well. It's up to them whether they win. If they play poorly, they'll lose. If they play well, they'll win. It's a kind of unusual situation they find themselves in.
So put your money where your mouth is.
At Twickenham, England.
England.
By 4.
Yeah, I think that's a good score.
I mean, Ireland have done it. And I think they've been the best. I don't think they've been given the credit for how good they were against Wales.
Yeah,
and I am worried about them.
I would agree with that, actually. Give me Ireland.
Ooh.
I am worried.
And on that bombshell.
It's going to be a big one. There are Premiership games
going on as
well. So we'll quickly rattle through those.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine.
So we have...
Sale Friday night against Leicester, isn't it?
Yeah, Sale hosting Leicester.
Big game.
You two going to be there?
I'll be there.
You working?
I won't be.
Why?
Got some friends up, and I'm travelling down to Exeter on Saturday.
Oh,
nice.
I will be there then.
So, Sale have got to right the wrongs. It'll be a pretty much full strength Sale team. Leicester missed in. Well, George Ford is the one that really counts.
Yep.
Yeah, Sale will win this at home.
You would hope so. I mean, you would really, really hope so.
Sale have to win this.
They will. They will. Comfortably, they will. I think.
Wasps host Saracens. Give me Saracens. If even on the strength of the teams, the Saracens play the way they did. If Wasps play the way they did, Saracens will win.
Yep.
I'm going to go Wasps at home. Oof. Edging that one.
Saturday, 2-3 o'clock games. We've got Bath Harlequins.
Bath at home.
Bath Harlequins. Yep.
Yeah. In what is likely to be a dreadful pitch, dreadful conditions.
Bog.
So FRD don't pick any Bath or Harlequins outside backs unless you.
That's a really good shout.
I bet I'm in for a good week next week.
What?
My FRD team against Tigers.
Oh yeah, you've got
so 15 many Sale players
basically.
When Sale play badly, that's what I mean. You still managed to bloody win this week. Fluke.
And then we've got London Irish hosting Gloucester. Gloucester to correct their errors from last week.
I'd say so.
Didn't Irish win? They won their last home game against. They beat Northampton, didn't they?
They did.
Beat Northampton at home, so they could be going for three in a row.
And Gloucester are flaky enough to lose this.
Yeah, true.
I'm still going to Gloucester win, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I'm going to say for Gloucester in it.
Yeah,
that'd be tight.
And then on Sunday we have Bristol hosting Worcester. Give me Bristol.
Bristol.
And Exeter hosting Northampton. Top of the table clash.
Exeter hosting Northampton. There's no way I can see Northampton doing that.
I'm working that one. Looking forward to that one. So I honestly couldn't tell who's going to win that one.
Nope. You have to tune in to find out.
Yeah. Tune in 1 o'clock, BT Sport.
1 o'clock? You've got two games on?
Well, because there's the England
game
afterwards.
At 3 o'clock.
Oh, brilliant.
So what's good is my flight back to Manchester is after the England game. But in plenty of time to get back here to do the podcast.
Wonderful news. Fantastic.
So I can sit in the departure. I'm going to get a taxi straight to the departure lounge, sit, watch the England game.
You fly from Newquay?
From Exeter to Manchester. It's Flybe.
Yeah.
Right,
that's why I need that company to stay afloat.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for listening. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He is at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking there somewhere, ready to slide into your DMs.
There's one more thing I needed to bring up. You've been writing articles on the slide, Tim Cocker.
Have you read it?
No, but someone told me that they'd got the Rugby Journal and you're in it.
Yes, I am. Yeah.
What have you done?
So the Rugby Journal is a quarterly. It's the sort of thing you would a very beautiful looking. I was going to say magazine.
Coffee table type thing. Publication.
Like, it's thick, beautiful.
So
coffee
I get
table.
A very similar one called Wings, right, which is. An aviation one, and it's about that thick, and it's full of just amazing photography of aeroplanes and a few words. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah,
isn't it?
It's beautiful. But it's I've done an article, hopefully the first of a few. But my article is rugby grappling with social media.
Of course. Oh.
So you can vent on that in the Rugby Journal.
I think it's quite hopefully. Thought provoking rather than venting. Mm. I think I managed to hide my venting.
I will look forward to reading that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I was told by a guy in Talk H who subscribes to the Rugby Journal. So if you want to read Tim's work, Rugby Journal is where it's at.
Get the Rugby Journal, subscribe to our podcast, and let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.